ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Since we're doing this retreat, and this session is, to summarize and put it all together, there are many ways to look at it. There are many verses that we could think of. This particular one is one of my, favorites. Plus, it also, gives the essence of what we were trying to accomplish here this weekend. So we'll recite the verse. Usually it is, for those of you who are new, the speaker recites one line, the audience recites back in response. We do it two times or three times, and then we'll do today, for the sake of time, two from the men's side, two from the women's side, and then we'll go forward. This is Canto 1, Chapter 5, Text 11. And then I'll give you the context of it.
Tadvag visargo janatagha viplavo yasmin pratishlokam abadhyavatapi. Namanyanantasya yashonkitaniyat shrunvanti gayanti grunanti sadhavah. Tadvag visargo janatagha viplavo yasmin pratishlokam abadhyavatapi. Namanyanantasya yashonkitaniyat shrunvanti gayanti grinanti sadhavah.
Please chant.
Tadvag visarga. Tatvag visargo janatagha viplavo yasmin pratishlokam abadhyavatapi.
Ladies, please.
Tadvag visargo janatagha viplavo yasmin pratishlokam abadhyavatyapi. Namanantasya yashonkitaniyat shrunvanti gayanti grinanti sadhavah. Tadvag visargo janatagha viplavo yasmin pratishlokam abadhyavatapi. Namanyanantasya yashonkitani yat Shrunvanti gayanti grinanti sadhavaha
Tat, that, vak, vocabulary, visargaha, creation, janata, the people in general, agha, sins, viplavaha, revolutionary, yasmin, in which, pratishlokam, each and every stanza, abadhyavati, irregularly composed, api, in spite of, namani, transcendental names, etc. Anantasya, of the unlimited Lord, yashaha, glories, ankitani, depicted, yat, what, shrunvanti, do hear, gayanti, do sing, grunanti, do accept, sadhavaha, the purified men who are honest, women also. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. On the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, form, fame, pastimes, etc. of the unlimited Supreme Lord is a different creation, full of transcendental words directed towards bringing a revolution in the impious lives of the world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. What I'm going to do is read, purport, pause, have some discussion, move on, okay? Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. First the context, so we know. This verse is spoken by Sri Narada Muni. So Narada Muni is a very amazing personality who's part of, or we are part of his disciplic succession. He's one of the teachers in our line. And a very empowered personality, is one of the direct sons of Lord Brahma. He is fully spiritual in his being. He can go anywhere he likes, anytime. No one can stop him. He is considered to be the sage among the demigods. And the word Narada, by his name, most of us have names that don't have any meaning with reality. For example, someone may have the name, whatever, some name. I don't want to pick on someone's name. You have some name, Is there a Michael in this room? Okay, we'll pick on Michael. Michael is the name given to someone after a saint, right? Saint Michael. With the intention that this person will have the same qualities, at least, of Saint Michael. But there are many Michaels who have no saintly qualities. I'll pick on myself. My father gave me the name before, my spiritual father gave me this name. Name from Katha Upanishad. This boy had a conversation with Yamraj and defeated Yamraj in argument. And my father was hoping I'll have such qualities, but I think I have made friendships with Yamaraj's followers. I know where I'm going. So, name and a person have no connection, unfortunately. But in Narada's case, the word Narada means Da is one who gives. And Nara is Lord Narayan. So he has the ability that whoever he meets, he can give connection with Lord Narayan, just like that. So he is speaking to Vyasadev. Vyasa is a title. It means the compiler. He is the person who, in this day and age, in this particular era of Vaivaswata Manu, has the task of putting all the Vedic knowledge in a way that is accessible and organized for people like us. And prior to Vyasa's coming to this world, all Vedic knowledge exists, but in sound form. Nothing is written down. Because when you write something, first of all, it becomes easily accessible to anyone and everyone. And Vedic knowledge is kept secretive. Not because they don't want to share with people, but they don't want to share with unqualified people. Just as I can't think of another parallel but this, that nowadays certain things like atomic secrets, how to make a bomb, they're not given to what they call rogue nations, because these rogue nations will take this knowledge and create a bomb and, you know, misuse it. That's the fear. Of course, those who are keeping it are not necessarily saintly themselves, but that's the idea. So Vedic knowledge was kept secret in sound form and given to a qualified person. And they were kept, and they were also instructed to keep it so, till they find another qualified person to give it to. But Vyasadev, we saw this picture yesterday, Subal Prabhu put up, Vyasadev looks into the future. He has the capacity to look into the future and know how things will be. And he looks at Kali Yuga, potentially all of us, and says, no qualified person here. Yet, everyone in Kali Yuga has to be benefited. So he puts it down in writing and let it be accessible to anyone and everyone. Because, you know, the phrase, don't throw pearls before a swine. Because even if a swine gets a pearl, all he can say is oink oink. There's nothing more than that, right? He can't know the value of it. So even Vedic knowledge, when it comes in front of a completely unqualified person in Kali Yuga, all we can say is oink oink, right? Because there's nothing else. We don't know what's in it and what to gain from it. So it has no value. So Vyasadeva puts it out. Now here's what's happened. So Vyasadeva has compiled all the Vedas, the four Vedas, the 108 Upanishads, the, I would say 17 Puranas for now. Everything's all put together, all the other Vedic knowledge has been nicely categorized into Brahmanas, Aranyakas, Samhitas, Upavedas, Ayurveda. There's that, the whole thing's been very fantastically organized. And actually, when someone would do something so fantastic, they would feel satisfied, they would feel accomplished. Hey, this is a magnum opus project, I feel very satisfied. However, Vyasadev, after all this, feels dissatisfied. Something's not complete. He has done the major thesis of his life. That's why he's born. He's called Vyasa. Just because of his accomplishment, yet he's dissatisfied. Now, most persons, when they're dissatisfied, they go to a bar and have a drink. Vyasadev sits in meditation. It's a little different way of dealing with his dissatisfaction. He sits in meditation, looking inward as to why am I dissatisfied. Now, no person, of course, Vyasadev is, however, in principle, no individual can figure out why they are dissatisfied. We need help of a higher source. So Narada Muni descends because he knows exactly what time to come, what to say, how to say it, who to say it to. And so he descends and he looks at Vyasadeva and says, "What's up, Vyasadeva? You don't seem too happy." And Vyasadeva says, "Oh Guru, Gurudev, thank you for coming. I don't know what's going on. I'm very dissatisfied. When I look at myself, I have lived a very pure life, very thorough. I mean, none of us can say, when I look back, I've lived a very pure life." He can say, I'm being audacious here, please forgive me. I'm sure some of you can say, I can't say. He says, I have looked through my life. I have lived by every vow I've made. I've lived a very pure life. I've never deviated even a micron from dharma. And I've accomplished this major task of compiling all the Vedas, but I'm dissatisfied and I don't know what's going on. So Narada says, not that you don't know, you know, but here's why. He says, you have compiled everything wonderfully. However, it has no value. Imagine being Vyasa being told, I mean, we're just young devotees. If we do something and someone comes and says, yeah, your service has no value, either we get very upset or hurt, angry, or and Vyasadeva is being told, all that you have done for all of humanity in the future has no value. So Prabhupada would narrate this story that a person would gather all his possessions, his qualifications, etc. But they're all like fat zeros. So if a person argues with another, I have 6 zeros, you only have 2 zeros. Has no meaning. Whether you have 1 zero or 6 or 10, they're zeros. However, these zeros have value as soon as you put a 1 before them. And if I put 1 before 2 zeros, it's 100. If I put 1 before 6 zeros, I don't know how much it is. It's a million, I think. 10 million. 10 million? Million. 10 million. What does it matter? We don't know how that number looks like. But anyway, it's 10 million. Suddenly. So Prabhupada would say that one has all these qualifications, qualities, skills, etc. But unless Krishna is there, where all these assets, talents, they're all directed towards Krishna, unless that's the case, they have no value. This is Narada's explanation. And then he comes to the verse that's previous to this one. He says, I'll read the English because it's really nicely written by Prabhupada. Those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered by saintly persons to be like unto a place of pilgrimage for crows. So one may have written very fascinating poetry, essays, books, novels, literature, discoveries, inventions. If they are not glorifying Krishna, they are like a gathering of, or a place of gathering for crows. Since the all-perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental abode, they do not derive any pleasure there. So while ignorant people of the world may clap and pat such persons on the back, the great transcendentalists don't even pay attention. There is a pastime of Krishna that just before the Mahabharata war, Duryodhan was trying to lobby Krishna. So he gets all of Krishna's special favors and armies and weapons and all. So he knew that Krishna was arriving. So he put up a palace. He had a grand reception party. He had hundreds of cooks prepare hundreds and thousands of varieties of food preparations. There were golden filigrees and paraphernalia. Plates were all made of gold, not styrofoam or even sugar cane, which is what we do. Nothing of that sort, all gold. There was a band party. They were playing very, very nice music for receiving Krishna. And Krishna just walked away from it. Didn't even care for Duryodhana's grandiose arrangement. Why? Because it was grand, but there was no love in it. There was nothing about glorifying Krishna. It was the guise, it was done in guise for taking something from Krishna. So Krishna can look through it. Similarly, the great sages and the spiritual master, one may put up all these wonderful things, but they can pick up very easily. They're called Paramahamsas. They can pick, a hamsa is a swan apparently, that if you mix milk and water and feed it, it can take the milk and leave the water behind. So our spiritual master and sages are considered like that. They're experts at knowing what's genuine and what's imitation. And Narada Muni then says this verse. On the other hand, that's how this verse starts. On the other hand, even if one composes something about Krishna, and even if it is improperly done, but done genuinely for glorifying Krishna, then the great sages and sadhus, they will hear it, they will repeat it, and they will accept it. So it may not be perfect, but it's the genuine attempt, the sincere attempt at glorifying Krishna that is accepted. And these persons have such vision. So Prabhupada, in the early days, I'll talk of two instances. One day I was walking down the Bowery Street, and there was a guy who was completely drunk, intoxicated, was high on drugs as well. He suddenly accosted Prabhupada with a knife on the street and threatening to attack Prabhupada. There was a little skirmish. Some people took care of this guy, pushed him aside so Prabhupada can pass by. A few days later, Prabhupada was walking down the street And the same man again accosted Prabhupada, but this time in his stupor sort of saluted Prabhupada. And Prabhupada says he's advancing in devotional service because there was some change in him. And one day in 26 Second Avenue, Prabhupada's sitting and speaking, and they're listening to Prabhupada, everyone very attentively. There was one drunk fellow who walked in. He was kind of swooning, and he had heard, I guess, somewhere that you should bring something when you meet the Guru and when you come to meet Krishna. Apparently he had heard something like that, if I remember the details well. He had brought some toilet paper. So walked with the swoon, walked into the restroom, put some toilet paper there, walked out, you know, swooning and just like that. And Prabhupada says, his devotional service has begun. So it's done improperly, it's done in a state of stupor, intoxicated. That's not how we come and do it, because and say, you know, that's the essence of it. We know better. However, even for such persons, Prabhupada, who's the sadhu, accepted that service. Okay, so this is the stage for the rest of the, now the purport is for us to understand how important, even if we do it improperly, still, as long as it is genuinely done, Krishna accepts it. Now what to speak of something that's done genuinely and properly, and why it is important. So let's see what Prabhupada says. It is a qualification of the great thinkers to pick up the best even from the worst. I have to tell you a story, so I'll tell you another story. There was on the road an old dry pumpkin. Many people were walking past the pumpkin, looking at it and just walking. One particular sage looked at it, picked up the old pumpkin. It had dried out completely. So it was, there was no, I guess, flesh in it. No, nothing in it. But it was dry. It was a shell. He picked it up. As he was walking along, again on the street, there was a stick. No one cared about a stick because, yeah, who cares for a stick? It has no value. The sage picked up that stick. Went along. And down the street again, there was a piece of wire. Now, no one cares for a piece of wire except a few people. This sage picked up that wire also. And suddenly, he put together the dry pumpkin shell, the stick, and the wire together as a one-string instrument so he could play and sing about Krishna. So what most people don't see any value in, great sages have. So one may write off most people. Some sages can see value in them. I'll come back and tell you the story of Crazy Pete, because otherwise we won't get beyond two lines of the purport. It is said that the intelligent man should pick up nectar from a stalk of poison. Now yesterday we were reading in the three modes of nature, if our discrimination is not clear, in the stalk of poison instead of nectar, we might pick up the poison if we don't know what the difference between one and the other is. Should accept gold even from a filthy place. Should accept a good and qualified wife even from an obscure family. And should accept a good lesson even from a man or from a teacher who comes from the untouchables. So when we are walking down the street, someone chastises us. If it's a good lesson, we should take it. In Prabhupada's time, you don't mind the stories, right? Okay, I hope you don't, because I don't have anything else to say. Okay. During Prabhupada's time, One of his secretaries at some phase was Satswarup Das Goswami. And Prabhupada, if you watched his videos and pictures, he would travel with a white briefcase that had some things in it. One key, there used to be a key in it. And the story of the key is, I'll tell you some other time. So Prabhupada would always carry his white briefcase. And Prabhupada, if you noticed, would walk very fast. And although his, and he was in physical stature, he was quite short. And Prabhupada's disciples were quite tall. Yet they couldn't keep pace with him for some reason. Prabhupada's stride was very, very quick and very fast. So Prabhupada was walking through the airport and these devotees were trying to follow Prabhupada and they couldn't keep up. So Prabhupada had already gone further. And Satswarup Maharaj, I think he was Brahmachari at that time or Sannyasi, I don't remember, was trying to keep pace with Prabhupada and walking briskly through the line, cut the line, almost knocked an old lady and just to get there to be with Prabhupada. And this old lady turned to Satswarup Maharaj and said, I forget exactly what she said verbatim, but in a sense was, is this what they teach you in your religion? And it was a rude awakening for him. Oh, people are noticing what I do and how I conduct myself. Although I wouldn't say the woman was an untouchable, that was not the point. But even from them, if there is a good lesson that helps us remember Krishna, then it's very worthwhile. These are some of the ethical instructions for everyone in every place without exception. But a saint is far above the level of an ordinary man. He is always absorbed in glorifying the Supreme Lord, because by broadcasting the holy name and fame of the Supreme Lord, the polluted atmosphere of the world will change. And as a result of propagating the transcendental literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam, people will become sane in their transactions. Yesterday, I believe there was some question that the Bhagavatam says the world will be a different place, but look at Kali Yuga. It seems like it is progressing with full force. So how do we understand what the Bhagavatam says? And what I'm sure there are many explanations to it. My appreciation is, if after propagation of Srimad Bhagavatam by Prabhupada all over the world in so many languages, and by creating these epicenters of the holy name all over the world, if after all of that, this is the stage of Kali Yuga, can we imagine what would be the condition if Prabhupada did not come? Can we imagine what it would be like had Prabhupada's followers not distributed literature all over the world and prasadam all over the world? Can we imagine the condition? Would we be even able to live what we call fairly peaceful life? So rather than look at, oh, a perfect peaceful condition, we should appreciate, even after all that, still, Kali Yuga has been checked quite well. Of course, it will progress because it is the will of Krishna, no doubt about it. It's like saying, can we make sure that there is no night at all? We can't. Unless it's the spiritual world where there is no concept of day and night, yet Krishna enjoys nighttime pastimes. That's a whole different topic. But there is no concept of night. But in this world, you cannot say no night. Night will come. And just as important as night, so we can appreciate the morning. It's just how the things are. So Kali Yuga will progress. However, can we be armed with something for ourselves? Let's begin with on an individual level and take it from there. Okay, Now he's talking about the atmosphere will change. The word used here in the first line, last word, Viplava. Viplava is a revolution. It's not talking of a change, it's talking of a revolution. The difference between a change and a revolution is, a change is something that can revert back. A revolution is something that you can't go back to. Like the French Revolution, for example. You know that story. The queen was told, the citizens are suffering. They have no bread to eat. And what was her answer? Let them eat cake. And that annoyed the bourgeois, the common man, so much that there was a coup d'etat. They challenged all the noblemen and women and started killing them one after the other, such almost like Parashuram finishing all the kshatriyas, all noblemen, the titles, they were massacred and killed because the common man couldn't tolerate it anymore. The insult that they're so insensitive of the queen, insensitive on part of the queen. So revolution is something that you don't go back to the previous condition. We say industrial revolution. The 20th century saw industrial revolution. It's not like you're going to go back to pre-industrial revolution. You can't do it. So when Viplava means a state of complete revolution that you don't go back to. So from a very sinful condition, it says Agha. Agha is sin. From a very dull, heinous consciousness, Aghasura, you know, that huge snake demon. Agha Viplava, such a revolution that even if you try, we wouldn't suggest that we do, but even if we tried, one cannot go back to that kind of consciousness. One cannot go back to such a heinous, sinful condition again. For example, the story of Mrigari the hunter. Very, very heinous fellow. He would half kill animals and derive great pleasure from it when he would see those animals struggling for life. And it would be a great source of joy for him. Ha ha, very nice. Look at him struggling. Some people like. I'll tell you a joke. Not because it's because I have to. I see some eyes drooping. So there was a guy who was not so intelligent. And he had to come up with a PhD thesis problem. Unless you state a problem, you cannot write your thesis and solve it and get your PhD. So this guy tried different things and he couldn't find. So one day it occurred to him that he should take a cockroach and do some experiment with it. So he put a cockroach on the table and said, run. But actually the cockroach ran. Then he picked it, cut off one of its legs and said, run. So it was struggling, but it ran. So like this, stage one, stage two, successively he was cutting off one leg and saying run. So by the time he finished cutting all the legs of the cockroach, put it on the table, he says run. Naturally the roach could not run. He said, voila, I found a great PhD problem. And he wrote down, when you cut off all the legs of the cockroach, it cannot hear anymore. Because you're a tough crowd, man. Shucks. All right. Anyway. Okay, Prabhupada says, while preparing this commentation on this particular stanza of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have a crisis before us. You know the crisis that Prabhupada was referring to? This was written in the 50s. Our neighboring friend, China, has attacked the border of India with a militaristic spirit. So we saw yesterday, there were different presentations on conflict, different kinds of conflict. conflict between two countries, conflict between people in the same country, conflict between families or within the family, within two, and conflicts within ourselves. And at that time, when Prabhupada was writing this, there was conflict even at that time. China had attacked India. We have practically no business in the political field, yet we see that previously there were both China and India, and they both lived peacefully for centuries without ill feeling. The reason is that they lived those days in an atmosphere of God consciousness, and every country over the surface of the world was God-fearing, pure-hearted, and simple, and there was no question of political diplomacy. There is no cause of quarrel between the two countries, China and India, over land which is not very suitable for habitation, and certainly there is no cause for fighting on this issue. But due to the age of quarrel, Kali, which we have discussed, there is always a chance of quarrel on slight provocation. Slight provocation. Remember, the mode of passion, what does it do? Two things. One of the things is, it provokes. So when our consciousness is influenced by the mode of passion, then the slightest of things, we become highly flammable. We get provoked for something, and we wonder why. Others will might wonder, why is he or she so provoked? But sometimes it happens, because at that moment, the mode of passion is very prevalent. Something about Kali Yuga. There was a Brahmin who was very, very thorough with his daily worship, his chanting of Gayatri, everything. Very thorough, precise, always on time, disciplined. One day, for some reason, this Brahmin had overslept. And the sun was about to rise, because that's the time you wake up and do Gayatri, and this Brahmin was not waking up. The alarm clock was going off, whatever, he was just not waking up. So another man came up to the Brahmin, shook him up and said, please wake up. It's time for you to take a bath and chant your Gayatri. So the Brahmin woke up. Oh, thank you very much. Quickly ran, took his bath, sat down, chanted his Gayatri, everything on time. And looked at the other person and said, who are you? Thank you for helping me, but who are you? And this person said, my name is Kali. Kali? You're the one who incites quarrel, and you're the guy who destroys dharmic principles. Why did you help me? Because if I had overslept, my religious activities would have gotten spoiled. Why did you wake me up? You're acting against your nature. And Kali said, see, Brahman, you're always thorough with what you do. You're very good. If you had overslept, then you would wake up and you would feel very guilty, and then you would become very morose, and you would beg Krishna for forgiveness, and suddenly you would become very humble. On the other hand, if I were to wake you up on time and you did everything, your pride will continue. So I'd rather see you proud than see you humble. So I helped you out. So Kali is very tricky. That's the whole point. Very, very tricky. Can creep in and make sure that his program will continue. This is due not to the issue in question, but to the polluted atmosphere of this age. Kali Yuga is like that. Everyone is at the edge of fighting with anyone, quarreling for no reason. Everyone's there at that brink, and a slight provocation, hell can break loose. Systematically, there is propaganda by a section of people to stop glorification of the name and fame of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, now this is the message for us, this theme for the weekend. Therefore, there is a great need for disseminating the message of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world. It is the duty of every responsible Indian, others you can take a vacation, to broadcast the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the world, to do all the supermost good as well as to bring about the desired peace in the world. Prabhupada writing of every Indian because he's in sitting in Vrindavan writing these. But because he's a world acharya, that message is relevant to all of us regardless of whether we are Indian or not. Prabhupada said, if we are breathing, we're good enough for preaching. Because India has failed in her duty by neglecting this responsible work, there is so much quarrel and trouble all over the world. We are confident that if the transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam is received only by the leading men of the world, certainly there will be a change of heart and naturally the people in general will follow them. So as students or young men and women, we are going to walk into the world and we will have some position of influence over others. It's but natural. And by being a devotee, whether we like it or not, that influence is already there. Somehow or the other, people will sort of gravitate to us. What is it about you? You look peaceful. What is it about you? You seem to know. You have answers for this. What is it about you? They want to know. And we should be prepared with the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Excuse me. The mass of people in general are tools in the hands of the modern politicians and leaders of the people. If there is a change of heart of the leaders only, certainly there will be a radical change in the atmosphere of the world. We know that our honest attempt to present this great literature conveying transcendental messages for reviving God consciousness of the people in general and re-spiritualizing the world atmosphere is fraught with many difficulties. He's a world acharya waiting to come onto the world stage and writing in a very sort of humble yet honest way, or I should say honest yet humble way, that we're fraught with many difficulties. And Prabhupada writes what his difficulty is. Our presenting this matter in adequate language, especially a foreign language, will certainly fail. And there will be so many literary discrepancies despite our honest attempt to present it in the proper way. Prabhupada's only focusing on his literary incapacity. He hasn't said many other things. He's 55 or 60 years old. Nothing will happen till he's 70. A kidney, he will fail. He will have two heart attacks. And face many other problems. No money. No contact in America, no friends, no name, no reference, cold, New York City, cold, no comfortable place to live. In fact, we heard recently, Prabhupada did not even have a place to take a bath. Now for us, not taking a bath might not be such a big deal, but for a Brahmin, for a Vaishnav, not taking a bath is like the most horrendous feeling. To be unclean. As college students, we may say, didn't take a bath. I haven't taken a bath for a long time. What's the problem? Prabhupada had to walk some distance every day to go to Mishra's ashram just to take a shower. And in the cold, for a 70-year-old man who's after two heart attacks to walk in the cold just to take a shower. Apparently, His Holiness Bhakti Choru Maharaj recently told some devotees that when we hear what Prabhupada is going through at the age of 70, we may not fully appreciate, because we can't relate to what it means to be a 70-year-old. He said, perhaps when each of us, or each of you is 70, you may have a better appreciation of it as to what Prabhupada went through. When we look at 70-year-old people today, most of them cannot do anything. And here's a man, Prabhupada, who took on the world and changed Viplava, not just, you know, made a name here and there. He changed the world. He checked the influence of Kali Yuga. This is not a small thing. Simply by one thing, by glorification of Krishna, which we call Kirtan. It's a glorification of Krishna by chanting of His holy name, by propagating the chanting, by propagating Krishna's name, fame, form, qualities and pastimes. Just this one thing brought about a change. So any of us, anytime we have a difficulty, whatever that difficulty is, if we turn our attention, even for that moment, towards Krishna's name, form, quality, pastime, that difficulty will either go away or we can surpass it very easily. The difficult part is to get our attention towards Krishna. That's the difficult part. Everything else is easy. And that's what we are practicing. We're called sadhakas, we're practitioners. We're practicing that at every moment, in every situation, somehow we turn our attention towards Krishna. So He gives us the intelligence of how to address the situation in front of us. However, He gives the intelligence. But that's our attempt. That is our genuine, sincere trial. Simply by, this is Bhagavatam, and the Bhagavatam is all about that. Okay. But we are sure that with all our faults in this connection, the seriousness of the subject matter will be taken into consideration, and the leaders of society will still accept this due to its being an honest attempt to glorify the Almighty God. Here's a very nice principle Prabhupada's referring to. When there is fire in a house, the inmates of the house go out to get help from the neighbors who may be foreigners, and yet without knowing the language, the victims of the fire express themselves, and the neighbors understand the need even though not expressed in the same language. The same spirit of cooperation is needed to broadcast this transcendental message of the Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the polluted atmosphere of the world. This is like the fourth time he's saying polluted atmosphere of the world. So this counteracting Kali Yuga. So Kali means the age of quarrel. And Prabhupada writes, everyone's at the brink. This atmosphere is surcharged with quarrel. So what's the antidote for quarrel? Cooperation. So Prabhupada writes, the same spirit of cooperation is needed to broadcast. That means somehow we learn to set aside that inner urge to quarrel, to fight, to become divisive, and overcome that, transcend that, to become unified in a cooperative spirit. Easier said than done. But that's the challenge in front of us. After all, it is a technical science of spiritual values, and thus we are concerned with the techniques and not with the language. The technique is to chant Krishna's name. The technique is to glorify God regardless of what language we do it in. If the techniques of this great literature are understood by the people of the world, there will be success. Final paragraph. When there are too many materialistic activities by the people in general all over the world, there is no wonder that a person or a nation attacks another person or nation on slight provocation. Yesterday we saw this short video. If you take a pebble, I've heard this 16 years ago and made so much sense. If you take a pebble and put it in a body of water, you see concentric circles or ripples throughout the body of water. If you put another stone in the same center, you will see concentric circles of ripples. But if you throw pebbles in different places, those concentric circles from each pebble with conflict will clash with another. So when there are different centers of attention in our lives, there will be clash. But if all of us make Krishna the center of our attention, there will no clashes. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu proved it by going through the Jharkhand forest and by chanting Hare Krishna. All the animals chanted with him. The bears, the tigers, the deer, etc. Hand in hand, they were chanting together with Lord Chaitanya, which normally a deer would be food for a tiger. But they forgot their animosity. So we may say, Lord Chaitanya in the forest. Look at what Prabhupada did. In Prabhupada's family, there are Jewish people and there are German devotees. Generally, they don't. In past history, we've seen somehow there's some conflict there. But they are very bosom, dear friends. One is a German, the other is a Jewish person. There are you transcend those differences. I'm rich, I'm poor. I'm from Brahman, I'm from Shudra. We transcend all these. I'm from Germany, I'm from some Jewish place, Israel. I'm from Palestine, I'm from this Muslim country, I'm from this Christian place, I'm from this Hindu. You transcend all of that. All these things that kept us separate from another person suddenly dissolve. The rich person serves right next to a very poor person. The Brahmin, so-called Brahmin, embraces the so-called Shudra, because that's not the criterion for difference. This is what Prabhupada brought the transformation in us. And he's asking us to assist, to go beyond it simply by making Krishna and the Bhagavatam the center of our lives. There are so many unwanted literatures full of materialistic ideas of sense gratification. In many countries, there are bodies appointed by the state to detect and censor obscene literature. This means that neither the government nor the responsible leaders of the public want such literature. Yet it is in the marketplace because the people want it for sense gratification. The people in general want to read. That is a natural instinct. But because their minds are polluted, they want such literatures. Under the circumstances, transcendental literature like Srimad Bhagavatam will not only diminish the activities of the corrupt mind of people in general, but also it will supply food for their hankering after reading some interesting literature. You want to expand your mind? Read Bhagavatam. It is so challenging in what it presents that we can sit here for lifetimes figuring out, really? Wow, that is far out. In the beginning, they may not like it because one suffering from jaundice is reluctant to take sugar candy But we should know that sugar candy is the only remedy for jaundice. What is it? Happiness in the beginning sounds like poison, tastes like poison, and later sounds like nectar, tastes like nectar. It's happiness in the mode of goodness. So Prabhupada is saying, in the beginning, it may be tough. It may be tough, but it will cure us, just like jaundice. The Jainita yesterday was telling us, jaundice is a condition that affects the liver, and the bile, that is one of the digestive juices, erupts a bitter taste to the entire being. So even if you eat sugar cane, which is the source of sugar, it tastes bitter. But sugar is the only remedy for curing the bile and curing the liver. If you take it in small doses though. And how do you know that you're being cured of jaundice? The same sugar that used to taste bitter now begins to taste sweeter. That's an indication. So Rupa Goswami, in the Nectar of Instruction, refers to this phenomena. This is the verse 5, I think. Syat Krishna Nama Charita Adi. The Krishna Nama Charita Adi. The Krishna's name, qualities, character, pastimes, etc. Sitapi. The one has this disease. Sitapi. Pitta Uptatapta Rasanasya. Pitta Uptatapta. That means pitta is the bile, is affected. Na rochikanu, there is no taste for it. Krishna kata, Krishna playing the flute, Michael Jordan, you know, dunking a 3-pointer, I'm just picking on Jordan for whatever. Where's Jordan? Why? Michael and Jordan, I picked on both. Anyway, so we have taste. Why do we have taste for something out there? Because the three modes of nature have conditioned us to taste like that. When we're influenced by the mode of ignorance, we have taste for rotten, smelly, fleshy, you know, things that are putrid. That's the taste. And it feels nice for the persons in the mode of ignorance. When a person in the mode of goodness looks at it, they'll throw up. It's like, whoa, what is it? So here's the example Prabhupada's guru Bhaktisiddhanta was describing. He had sent some of his disciples to Rangoon, now Burma. I think now it's called Myanmar. It's a country that's east of Bangladesh, east of India. Okay, it's Burma, it's called Myanmar now. And the brahmacharis that opened a center, and in the morning they were cooking halwa in ghee. So it has a particular fragrance to it, or smell if you want to call it. The neighbors complained. What is it you're cooking in this thing? It is smelling so bad. And they were also cooking right on the street. They were grilling animals. The stench from it was very nice. Fragrance, but ghee, halwa, was horrible stench for them. It's just the modes of nature. This mode attracts us, we resonate with those kinds of tastes and fragrances and flavors. As soon as our consciousness moves from the mode of ignorance to mode of goodness, those tastes change away. So it's the transformation, the viplava, the revolution that needs to come here. Okay. Similarly means just as jaundice is cured by sugar candy, similarly, let there be systematic propaganda for popularizing reading of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, which will act like sugar candy for the jaundice-like condition of sense gratification. When men have a taste for this literature, the other literatures which are catering poison to society will then automatically cease. Why is it poison? Why are other literatures compared to poison? Why? What does poison do? What does poison do? It kills one, right? So the other literatures are compared to poison because it kills the spirit of devotional service. It kills that spark of interest or curiosity in trying to understand who we are. It completely kills our ability, our chance for coming in contact with Krishna, because it stoops us in matter very, very deeply. That's the poison. Anything that makes us forget Krishna is poison in that sense. We are sure, therefore, that every human in society, we're sure, therefore, that everyone in human society will welcome Srimad Bhagavatam, even though it is now presented with so many faults, for it is recommended by Sri Narada, who has very kindly appeared in this chapter. Without humility, just as the Brahman, just as anyone can have pride, the Brahman or Vaishnav, who should be free of pride, can have pride. The pride that I'm doing something. Just this morning I was hearing, the speaker said like four times, devotees, be careful of pride. Devotees, be careful of pride. And there's a story of the Shamantaka jewel. Be careful of pride. And what's that careful? I am doing it. I am indispensable. I am a blessing to this world. Actually, I should be humble. I'm not a blessing to this world. I'm just a blessing to a few people. But I'm still a blessing to someone. This pride is going to kill and spoil everything. You may have wonderful plans, but if we are affected with this pride, then everything we try in the propagation of Srimad Bhagavatam will be completely destroyed. That doesn't mean quarrel or differences between people or devotees will vanish. It may still be there, but we need to learn to address it in a different way, not the way we are accustomed to, habituated to. And humility, Prabhupada's writing, I'm writing it full of faults. There's no fault except the language maybe, Prabhupada's citing. There's no fault in the message. But he is banking on Narada Muni's grace. He's convinced only because Narada has said. So our going out to the world and becoming emissaries, that was the phrase, a word Subal Prabhu used, emissaries, is only possible when we understand that we are instruments in Prabhupada's hands. The spoon doesn't say, oh hand, take a vacation, I'll mix everything in the pot by myself. No, that's not the nature of the instrument. It is the hand that moves it. And the spoon does what it needs to do very thoroughly, as long as it's in the hand of the skillful cook. Similarly, we're instruments of Prabhupada and Krishna. And that's what we need to appreciate and learn. How to become the best instrument in the hands of Guru and Guru Parampara. And all of our practices from morning till night, our chanting, our serving, our cleaning and singing and just studying, whatever we're doing, our working, is all a practice to become a fit instrument. And that becoming a fit instrument comes only by calling out for His divine grace, as they say. Without that grace, try as much as we want, we may become very skillful, but we will not become an instrument. It is that grace that needs to descend in the heart. And it only descends when there is humility. And this whole verse is about that. Of course, Narada is not saying that, Vyas, you're not humble. But Prabhupada's whole mood is making a humble attempt. And he's confident it will be successful because Narada's grace is there. So I think I've gone over my time. Any time for one question? Any one question, comment? Karunanidhi, Prabhu.
Prabhu, still I could not understand why it is written in translation that although it was wrongly composed. How is Srimad Bhagavatam can be wrongly composed?
That's not what Narada is saying. Narada is saying, Yachmin Pratishlokam Abhadyavat Api. Even if wrongly composed, still, because it is about Krishna, the sadhu will accept it. Here's an example. When Srila Prabhupada was traveling, along with Prabhupada was Prabhupada's disciples, of which was a couple, Shamasundar Prabhu and Mother Malati, and they had a daughter, Saraswati. She was this little. Saraswati would stand on stage and dance when Prabhupada would do kirtan, or when they were distributing books, she would go tug at someone's shirt and say, "Do you know who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Krishna." And she may say it in, you know, sort of baby talk or babbling something. But Prabhupada accepted it because it was genuine. It was about Krishna. You understand? Like that. So Narada is giving a principle. Even if something is wrongly composed, from a literary perspective, someone might say it's not okay. Even then, because it is about Krishna, it is wonderful. On the other hand, if it's not about Krishna, but it is done wonderfully, it is considered garbage. So I started with the zeros and one. You may have many zeros, but unless it is for Krishna, those zeros have no value. So when we do something for Krishna, we do something very nicely. But more important, or as important as we're doing something nicely, is what's our heart like. We may have something very fashionably done, very nicely done, but if internally we're not Krishna conscious, Guru and Krishna will not accept it. Just as Duryodhana offered all these wonderful foodstuffs to Krishna, he didn't look at it. But Prabhupada's young disciples, who didn't know anything about Krishna, they would make all sorts of offerings, but they did it genuinely and Krishna accepted it. And there are many stories of it. I'll end with this one. There's one devotee of Prabhupada, a disciple of Prabhupada, her name was Khladini. She was in New Vrindavan. And she was in different places, but spent a lot of time in New Vrindavan. And at that time, New Vrindavan was not such an opulent place, out in the forests and mountains. And for the afternoon 4 o'clock offering, which usually offer fruits, she went into the cooler or wherever and found there were no fruits, because they didn't have as many at that time. And there were only a few limes. So she made lime juice for the deities and offered the lime juice. But she had remembered that Prabhupada said, if you offer even in your mind, Krishna will accept it. So while she's ringing the bell and offering lime juice, in her mind she's offering Jagannath, "I offer you strawberries, I offer you apples, I offer you grapes, just nice." And while she was on the altar offering, because 4 o'clock usually no one's there, there was just one man coming and placing something and going back, coming back in, putting something, going on. So when she finished offering, she came out to check what is it that, you know, someone left at the door. Believe it or not, it was strawberries, apples, grapes. All the fruit she had offered in her mind, the boxes were there. Because Krishna accepts. And in her life, there are all these fascinating things that happen simply by genuine service attitude. Now the same disciples, when first Jagannath had come in San Francisco, they had Jagannath, Baldev and Subhadra, and Prabhupada told them, you cook rice that you offer. They didn't know how to cook rice. So once they made rice and the rice had burnt at the bottom. You can smell when rice burnt. But they said, whatever. They put it on the plate, put it in front of Jagannath, rang the bell, closed the curtains. And as soon as the pujari finished ringing the bell, that plate from the altar flies and on the floor. The whole rice scattered everywhere. Because Balaram will not accept that rice. It was genuine, I'm sure. The deities were showing, we're here. And because Prabhupada invited us, we're here and we're interacting with you. So when genuinely done, Krishna will accept anything. Actually, the story continues, that's the punchline. After rejecting Duryodhana, Krishna walked to Vidura's house and he came as an uninvited guest, called Atithi, and knocked on the door. Vidura was not at home. Vidura's wife opened the door. Imagine, one day you get a knock on the door, you open the door and Krishna standing there. That would be wonderful, wouldn't it? But then imagine, he was standing there. She was stunned, tears flowing out of her eyes, through her eyes and from her eyes, and she didn't know what to say, she didn't know what to do. There's a guest, this Krishna, you know, what do I offer? She ran in sort of a state of frenzy. She only found some bananas, came running, peeled the bananas, threw away the banana and offered the peel to Krishna. Why? Because she was just too excited and so in this kind of frenzy that Krishna was in my house. Her heart was brimming with love, and in that she made a mistake, threw away the banana and gave him the peel. Guess what Krishna did? He ate the peel. He could have said, I appreciate the love, but I like the banana, I don't eat the peel. He could have said that. He ate the peel and said, very nice. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati. And Krishna says, ashnami prayatatmanaha. The word ashnami means I eat. He didn't say I accept. He says I eat. So patram, if you offer a leaf, I will eat it. Pushpam, you will eat a flower? Krishna will eat a flower. If he can eat a peel, he will eat a flower. Because others, as far as leaf, water, right? We can understand. Phalam, fruit, I will eat. Okay, I understand. Eat a leaf, eat a flower. Ashnami. Krishna says, I will eat. Because Krishna's also over, because in that verse, twice the word bhaktya is used. With double emphasis, that if there is love, I will eat it. So just as Krishna, the devotee is overcome with love, Krishna is overcome with love such that the discriminatory power of, you know, this banana, this is peel, goes away. And Prabhupada is giving us that access. We just have to sort of try to get there by his grace. So this verse is saying, even if something, not that we should make mistakes or do things improper. That's not the point. With all our sincere attempt, even if there are mistakes, still. Fair enough? Okay. Sorry, I kept you a lot longer than I should have. Subal Prabhu, please forgive me. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Thank you, Nityananda Prana Prabhu ki jai. Devotees, so the next session is scheduled at 10, but I'm thinking make it at 10:30, so there's a little space for helping downstairs. So we can gather in the second floor at 10:30 for the last session, which is questions and answers. Thank
and
you.
Now
sir.
We need some help downstairs?
Yeah, there's a vegetable caught up and then some cleaning in the kitchen. So if you would like to help, you can touch base with the devotees, Mitch and Jordan. And thank you. Hare Krishna.
Because it is Krishna and Prabhupada's purport.
Thank you. After a long time, I'm very